nothing Ross could do about it. He was too weak and too far away from theory. A fiery streak flashed through the trees, hitting an archer who was just about to pull the bowstring right in the chest. He became engulfed in flames instantly and fell to the ground in less than 10 seconds, a charred mass still aflame and falling apart into embers. His companion was already falling down right next to him, and then a third red player became a human torch a little further away. Ross saw a group of players marching in formation from the direction of the deciduous forest. They kept pelting the reds with spells and arrows. The hapless noob hunters realized that they were greatly outnumbered and tried to scatter, but their pursuers were experienced and didn't leave the retreating miscreants a single chance. And then there were none. Almost. Two of the luckiest ones were taking their very last breaths. Theory pulled the arrow out, jumped up, slid behind a fir tree, stood still, then crouched suddenly, disappearing into thin air. Ross drew a sigh of relief. Now she wouldn't be killed indiscriminately, just for the color of her name. But his relief was premature. One of the approaching mages noticed the girl's maneuver and hit the fir tree that she had hid behind with an area spell. Theory was never particularly quick. The only time Ross saw her move fast was today, after using an assassin's ability. But the effect had worn off, and she didn't manage to leave the danger zone. A fiery whirlwind dealt her some damage, dispelling her invisibility as a result. She tried to hide behind the next fir tree, favoring one leg as she moved, but two arrows hit her right then, immediately followed by some spell that looked like a huge ball of boiling water. Theory fell. She started to rise right away, shooting an arrow without taking aim, but a new spell set her and everything in the radius of a few feet around her on fire. Attention! A member of your party has been killed. Thirinawaria Rene Yilla. Damn! Ross had really hoped she'd be safe now that she was invisible. He had witnessed her prowess at remaining unnoticed, so he assumed she would make another brilliant vanishing trick once again. But she never did. Plague jumped up and started to shake her fist at them. "Why did you kill her, you morons?" "Why are you yelling?" asked one of the warriors from below as he checked the bodies of the fallen reds for loot. "Why would you have to burn the archer girl? She was okay. She was killing the reds here. She was red herself. Just a teensy bit. Slightly pinkish." The warrior made a dismissive gesture. "Well, no one's gonna get into the finer details now, so pipe down already. You should be glad. If it weren't for us, you'd all have been killed." Daddy waved to the warrior. "Nah, it's all cool. That was real rad. Respect." The warrior grinned, always happy to please. Daddy explained, "They're from the APK clan, and they keep raiding this area. They sure did a cool job tracking these twerps down. Right, what do we do now? Hey, Bubble, are you sure you don't want to level up with us?" Ross wanted to fly instead of going anywhere so that he could reach Theory's body right away and revive her, but he'd never make it. She would not stay there for too long, and climbing down and running over would just take too long. There, that was it. Her body vanished into thin air, leaving nothing but the bow behind. How would she manage in the locked lands without a weapon? "She lost her bow, too," Plague yelled, pointing at the scorched spot. "Who was it?" asked the mage as he approached the lake. "Thirinawaria Rene Yilla, or simply Theory," Ross answered. The mage made a surprised face. "Hell, I didn't recognize her. Guys, we've made a mistake. We've just killed Theory by accident." The APKs started to babble and banter. Only one of them, a mage dressed in white with a luxurious gray beard, shook his head. "This wasn't well done at all. We'd have to return the bow somehow." "I will take care of that," said Ross, climbing down. "You mean you know where to look for her?" "We have arranged to see each other, but it won't happen right away. Once I get there, I'll give it back to her." Just so as you know, I have memorized your name. Whenever one of you meets Thierry, ask her whether this guy had returned her bow to her. If you decide to keep it for yourself, you'll run into big trouble. Hey, where are you off to in such a hurry? Gonna level up some more or what? We haven't cleared everything. There may be a few reds left there still. I don't need to level up. I'm headed for the capital. You still need to cross the ruins to get there. Hold on a little. Once we get ready, we can go together. You'll be safe with us, and once you cross, things will be a lot more peaceful. Ross didn't mind. He'd had enough adventure for the day. The man that lately bore the name of John Shelby and the moniker Octopus has been on many assignments, some of them easy and others less so. And this was the first time he ran into a mystery he couldn't solve. He, on the other hand, was the author of many such mysteries, so that no one would find out the truth about certain events that had to remain secret. Suffice to remember the case of Professor Barbarossa. They were still searching for him, and there were even rumors that someone had seen him with the pretty young woman that disappeared at the same time. The general public was certain they'd been having the time of their life on some tropical beach for the last 5 months. But people were stupid and prone to falling for simple explanations or even completely ridiculous fabrications. Octopus was one of those few who knew how the rumor got started. It was but a minute detail of what had turned out to be a very uncomplicated cover-up op. Barbarossa's disappearance was no ordinary thing. He was gone so thoroughly, he'd never be found under any circumstances. There was simply nothing left to look for. A special set of reagents turned his body into jelly, and then into a liquid. Nothing remained. No bones, cartilage, hair, fat, or even tooth enamel. The very same thing happened to the body of the woman designated for the role of the professor's romantic interest that he had been supposed to have eloped with. Not even any identifiable DNA molecule fragments could have remained. All of it was flushed down the drain and soon dissolved in the enormous sewers of a large city. Their bodies joined the great natural cycle of matter some 5 months ago. This Rostovstev character was a real mystery, an oddity, and Octopus had to make sense of it. The first time, he got the pointers to his likely location from the management. The second time, he found all the necessary data on his own. But he didn't get lucky the second time either. Just like back then at the hospital in San Francisco, the strange customer gave him the slip again. But nothing ever truly vanishes without a trace. You just need to know where to look. After the hospital episode, Octopus was helped by some of the staff, overly fond of money and completely allergic to pain as well as physical and psychological discomfort in general. Then he'd had to deal with certain logistics agencies' employees in the same way to find out how and why they'd managed to send his target along such a convoluted itinerary. However, Octopus managed to solve this puzzle. He found out about the warehouse, where the container he'd been searching for was stored. It was made of steel sheets and contained a life support system with a supply of all the necessary nutrients and medicines, as well as the very object he'd been searching for all this time, going to such unbelievable lengths, the body of the elusive Mr. Rostovstev. A trickster beyond compare, capable of defying the attempts of the most experienced hunters to catch him, even in a coma. But any quarry stops and faces its hunter sooner or later. It was Rostovstev's turn this time. A few people would like to see him through the octopus's eyes, and he would oblige in a moment. The capsule's lid opened. John Shelby studied its contents dispassionately, turned around, left the premises, opened his car door, climbed into the driver's seat, and turned towards the tiny webcam in the corner of his rearview mirror. Any audio or video feed from this car was scrambled and passed on through a long chain of servers to the other party, his superior, who oversaw the entire operation. Even if anyone managed to tap into the feed, they would understand nothing. Those were but standard security measures. Octopus trusted no one, but even he had to admit that the company's state-of-the-art computers could not be hacked. The brightest minds working in that field created them, and it had cost an enormous amount of money. Those machines could be trusted with the most important secrets. They would stay safe with them. Octopus stared at the webcam unblinkingly, as though trying to look directly at the person on the other end of the line, and said in a perfectly flat voice, "He isn't there. Rostovstev had managed to slip away. Yet again." Chapter 11. Roz had already visited the capital of the Western Empire twice. It was the largest city in the region, where he had been incarnated in the game for the first time. He had never ventured anywhere else. He may not have liked everything here, but there were certain circumstances that prevented him from traveling far. It was a major trade center. You could buy or sell everything here, including incredibly rare items you wouldn't find at any game auction. This was where the most powerful NPCs lived. With enough fortune and persistence, they could give you quests that, upon successful completion, would give you opportunities unavailable to the general public. The capital was also an excellent place to just roam the central streets, showing off your stellar equipment and letting every gawker see just how high your level was and what a mighty player you were. This was also the place where you could forget all about levels and stats and spend all your times partying, attending festivals, and all other sorts of events where you could get properly entertained without doing any of the boring things required to level up. Indeed, if you had money, why bother with all the tedious leveling up? There were so many options for entertainment here, after all. You could party every minute, have all the fun in the world, and open yourself up to all kinds of new experiences. There was no point wasting your life on battling digital monsters. They wouldn't appreciate it anyway. The capital was the land of opportunity for those who didn't care about the standard character development model. One could, for instance, visit any of the city's 200 high-class brothels to find partners of all races, and a lot of those weren't remotely human. It didn't have to be soulless NPCs, either. There were always enough level zero players willing to make a few quick bucks, trading them for services of a specific nature. All you need was a small investment. A special designer could create a unique appearance and choose a set of outfits to match. You could have acne all over, weigh 400 pounds, and have a face like a brick IRL that even a worst-case scenario virgin would hardly find attractive. Yet here, you could become the king or queen of the demimonde. Should such a fancy take you, you could dazzle everyone. Throw expensive gifts out of the window with hysterical laughter and pick out anyone you fancied from a long waiting list while the maids washed the floor of your boudoir with champagne. But you'd need a modicum of intelligence to accomplish this, apart from everything else. There were millions of players in Second World who had played for months on end, never killing a single measly mob. They didn't even have any weapons for it. They squandered their characters' lives, never venturing outside the walls of the larger cities. They could find everything they needed within city limits, after all. Those silk-clad wastrels lived in a parallel universe, sincerely failing to understand why one would waste so much time on something as uninteresting as leveling up when there were so many ways of finding entertainment, and it didn't cost all that much either. In real life, they would have limited access to most of those, or none whatsoever. How could you get an enormous villa of green marble with furniture handcrafted from precious hardwoods IRL? You wouldn't need to do so much as drive nails into walls. There were NPC servants to help you with that. Not much of an option in real life, really. How could you, provided your income was barely enough for accommodation of the most modest sort? But in Second World, it was all available to you. No one cared that they spent nearly all the money they made offline here. It was worth it. Everything was much brighter and of a much higher quality. Out there, there was nothing but grayness and tedium. To many, real life became an unpleasant chore, like scheduled visits to hell. People leave for a few hours, do their time dejectedly, and hurry back to the capsule to return to the place where life felt real, as opposed to the frozen dreariness of everyday existence. Ross didn't come here to waste time on mindless entertainment. He had some business to take care of, as always. And the business was important, obviously. Digits met him outside the city gate. He looked nothing like the pathetic noob spending his time hunting frogs in a moat around a backwater town in a nondescript province. However, it ceased being nondescript shortly after Ross had first fallen on his ass onto the paved streets of that very town, seeing the game world with his own eyes for the first time, the flabbergasted eyes of a noob. Back then, Digits helped him quite a bit. On the other hand, he had also set him up a little. At any rate, Ross was grateful to him and remembered him when he was already in a position to do something in return. "Hello there, Bubble," said Digits in a conspiratorial manner. "You should use Ross. It makes no sense to use all this cloak-and-dagger stuff between us. What about security? The capital is a posh and a very uptight place. No one will manage to just grab me on the street. Do you intend to change your name and your appearance yet again? I'm sure there are dozens of eyes watching you. They'll be surprised to find out you were talking to some random noob, and they're pretty good at drawing the right conclusions. I covered my tracks pretty well. That's what you think. They're good at sniffing things out. I'm pretty capable of covering my tracks. Rest assured about that. What I have found is that they can find you no matter how thoroughly you cover them. There's weird stuff going on in this game, Digits. Are you gonna tell me? Hopefully later. I've lost a lot of time already. I've got to hurry back. Didn't you have to complete some sort of quest here? Yeah. I need an audience with the Emperor. Are you kidding? Not one bit. In that case, you're up Shit Creek, and there aren't any paddles to be had for miles around. You can spend months in the queue and not make any progress at all. For some reason, I have a feeling it should take me less than one day. Huh. I'd like to make a bet on that, but something tells me I might lose all my money. In that case, don't bet. Talking about money, I have a full report handy, and I've been sending you all the info I had at the forum so you know everything about every transaction. It's not that. I'll need a rather substantial sum. I've got far-reaching plans. I've brought you a few items to sell. Take a look at what we might sell at once and what would be best held back for a while. Ideally, I'd need 50,000 in about 3 hours. There are a few things I'd like to buy. Only very recently, I'd have had a stroke if someone had asked me for that much, but there has been some considerable progress lately. Your little enterprise keeps growing. Indeed, I have a hunch we'll soon deal in millions. We definitely will. So, what kind of items? All sorts of stuff. Weapons, armor, jewelry, and so on. No junk, as usual, I presume. Perish the thought. No junk at all. Some of the items are enchanted, and most of those are pretty cool. Let's go to the bank. I'll dump it all in your vault. Why waste time? Here's my bag. Okay, but would you be able to carry a ton, for example? How much? I don't have the precise weight, but there's a lot. Well, sure, that's the spirit. Makes no sense to bring stuff from afar in small batches. You wear your shoes out too quickly that way. My point precisely. I'm sorry, I forgot you were the great emperor of the noobs. Sure, one emperor will see another at once. Someone suddenly butted into their conversation. My greetings to Mr., Bubble. Is there any chance you might spare some of your time before you go on about your own business? Ross turned around to see a player of the human race. His features were Asian in a cartoonish way and looked strange, given his height and his enormously wide shoulders. Still, anyone in Second World could go for any look they wanted, so this guy's appearance wasn't that unusual after all. There were often plenty of beggars on the streets of big cities, but the stranger's pause before he called Ross by his false name was eloquent enough. He was implying that he knew just whom he was addressing. Cody M? Who the hell are you? We've never seen you before. Why don't you beat it before you get beaten? The boisterous digits switched into aggression mode at once. Would you please calm down your friend, Bubble? Or would you prefer to be addressed differently? By your real name, for example. Zip it, digits. What's that? You mean you know him? This is the first time I've met him, but I think I'll have to spare some time nonetheless. Cody Meh nodded. There are a few serious issues we need to discuss. Let's go. There's a very convenient place nearby. No one will overhear us there. Your dagger is poisoned, pestiferous East. O world, you are flawed. You're a murderous beast. The snowstorm I'll ride through the heat of the south. A treacherous kiss burned my friend's frozen mouth. The thorns pawn the way, and thither I'll head, and there'll be no more mirthful Cretans to dread. A blue horse will greet me, and nuzzle my side, and into the sunset, together we'll ride. Ross wasn't an expert in contemporary poetry, but this particular piece of verse struck him as a particularly gratuitous example of pompous logorrhea. Alternatively, it could be called the ruminations of an overly medicated mind with all kinds of alkaloids circulating through it. However, even such drivel looked impressive, given the setting and the way it was presented. The setting could compensate for a lot. Poetry lovers from the capital chose this garden for their performances for a good reason. It was perfect for impressing the audience. Firstly, there were lots of flowers all around, and their aroma made one's mind spin. They may even have had a psychedelic effect, for one's vision would start to blur after a few full lungfuls. Secondly, there were hundreds of benches made of white marble and hard wood sourced by the disenfranchised Level Zero workers from dangerous tropical woods. There was enough place for the audience and fellow poets. Thirdly, and most importantly, there was an arch made of magenta stone, with ingenious ramps looking like the inside of a spiral shell on either side. You could easily use it to climb the structure, tall as a 9-story building, recite absolute gibberish to the ones watching you from below, and they would still applaud because everything looked so impressive. Also, the fragrances of some of the flowers may have interfered with one's critical thinking. "What flowers are these?" Digits asked. "I'd like to plant a few on my windowsill." Cody Meh shook his head. They're magical. They only grow in two places and nowhere else. You are looking at the first one now. The second is inaccessible to the general public. This is the poet's lotus. They were created by the emperor's personal gardener. Apart from other things, their aroma reveals everything that is hidden. In other words, no one could enter here and stay invisible, and thus no one's gonna get close enough to eavesdrop on us. A very convenient place indeed, Ross nodded. I'm aware of your identity. Is that all you wanted to tell me? It isn't. I have an offer, and both of us will benefit from it. And that would be? I have some information for you, which I can provide for a fee. We don't pay anything to rip off artists, the avaricious digits butted in. I'd prefer our conversation to be confidential. I have no disrespect for your friend, but he knows nearly nothing about some of your activities, and is rather vulnerable IRL to boot. What he may hear here may cause him a lot of trouble. At the very least, it won't be to his benefit. Ross pondered this for a few seconds and nodded. Digits, if he says anything I'll feel you need to know, I'll tell you later. Could you please wait elsewhere for the time being? As you wish. Just don't take too long. The balderdash they recite from up there makes my head feel like it's the size of a watermelon, and it's big enough as it is. Okay, you got it. Cody Mih waited for Digits to leave, and then said, staring directly in front of himself, My name used to be Cody Mitchell, and I was one of the gaming process analytics working for Second World. Used to be? You are Yevgeny Rostovstev, and you have suffered a horrible accident at the lab. There's not much left of your body, but it still exists. You're alive, so it makes sense for you to use your real name, but to me, it makes none. My body doesn't exist anymore. It burned to a crisp as I was logged on. They scooped it out of the burned-out capsule, but there was nothing left to resuscitate. My condolences. So, you're stuck here too? Not quite. You are here voluntarily. I'm not. It was a violent death. I've been killed for no reason at all. It was an extraordinary situation, of course, but I'd never betray the corporation. But someone had a different opinion, which became my death sentence, and there was no justice in it. You know, when you hunt for information, you have to exchange it, and you may run into pretty ambiguous situations. Ross, I was one of the first people to start looking for you back then, at the beginning, after your very first heroic deeds, and I was the only one who had managed to track you down. It eventually became easier, for my discovery had been instrumental for the development of an optimized search algorithm. But you kept on evading us. Most importantly, we never managed to answer the simple question of just who the hell you were and what you wanted from us. So you decided to find out now, just like that, looking me in the eye. It isn't. I'm dead, after all, and dead men can't work for any corporation. I'm not really interested in your secrets. I mean, it would be fun to find out the answers, but I'm more concerned about other things right now, and idle curiosity would just be a distraction. I'll tell you everything I know. I don't know who you are and why you're doing what you're doing, but you're by no means a friend of the corporation. More like the opposite. It may be that what you find out will let you cause it more grief. Some vengeance is better than none. I know a lot, and I won't charge you much. You may as well agree. You'll benefit from this. I have to say that although I'm no friend of your former corporation, I'm not its enemy either. I'm on my own, and I'm not sure just what you're talking about. But you are probably interested in what they think about you and their plans concerning your person, aren't you? I'd sure like to know. I want 25,000 in gold, game money. That's not exactly a puny sum. It is, considering the goods you're getting. I could have asked for a lot more, but I don't need it. For $25,000, you'll find out something no one else is ever likely to tell you. Your information may not be worth that much money. Rest assured, it is. Had nothing changed, I'd have kept my mouth shut as always. No one had any idea about the things I knew. There were a few well-hidden and dangerous secrets, but my forte has always been finding things others couldn't. That was exactly why I was a valued specialist. These days, you cannot accomplish anything without leaving a trail. Those people are clever, but they're also stupid in a certain way. They bury everything as deep as they can, but they give their lapdog analysts all the threads. And we are the ones specializing in uncovering buried secrets. Still, it doesn't mean they have the right to question our loyalty. That's just the kind of job we do. Right, let's do it this way. I'll tell you everything you'll need to know, and then you decide whether or not my demand is reasonable. You would trust me that much? I've studied you well enough. There were plenty of opportunities. I know things about you that you don't know yourself. Such as? Well, how about this? You have been actively using one of your race bonuses that allows you to get extra stat points as you lose your levels. Did you share this fact with many fellow players? Not many, but I'm not the only one who knows about it, and as far as I know, this ability isn't unique. Other players are reported to have done something similar, too. There are no such races in the standard list. I was lucky to get a special offer on a rare ware. A special offer. Yeah, right. But are you aware this feature won't work forever? For example, you won't be able to get 1,000 agility points, dropping your level down from 70 to 10 over and over again. The game will react sooner or later and introduce some element that will no longer let you use this feature. I have a long way to go before I get 1,000 agility points. Even if they make it impossible, something like that would still be a piece of cake to you. You're the greatest hero ever, after all. So, do you agree to my conditions? I only pay once I receive the information, in case I consider it valuable enough. As for you, you trust me and hold back nothing. I trust you, all right. There's no time for lengthy conversations anyway. Okay, I agree. These people can kill you. Who are they? The cartel? The top brass of the corporation? Do you know how the Second World Project started? I've never been particularly interested in that. You should have been. If I were you, I'd definitely be curious about the history of the game I'd be living in. Ever heard of Michael Silber? Some billionaire fat cat. I don't remember any scandals involving him. Just your average rich guy. We simply know him as the old man. He is really very, very old. Some say he had already been old when Methuselah was born, and it might be true, you never know. Silber had already been an ancient ruin when the whole thing started. No one used to think of gaming back then. Silber used to make simulators for the army, full immersion effect for fighter pilots. Gravity load felt almost real, the destruction of airborne and targets, and negative experiences if one's plane got destroyed. There was also a simulator for infantry that functioned in multi-user mode. For instance, four soldiers can get themselves into a tank and start firing their guns, roll over anything that still lives, and wreak havoc in general, with the support of artillery, helicopters, and special forces. Human factor used to be really important before armies started to switch to robots and drones. Training like that made it possible to avoid wasting expensive machinery. The soldiers faced no real risk either. Initially, the old man's labs produced mobile cubicles where they would place a soldier. They could spin in every direction, stop suddenly, accelerate, and even imitate a zero-G environment, although without complete verisimilitude. Thus, the systems had mechanical components as well, although the electronic performed most of the functions. The very fact that a new system of transmitting video signal was created as a result speaks for itself. I'm familiar with the topic, somewhat. Such simulators were hardly anything extraordinary, and the old man had always had lots of competitors, until one day he met a completely mad professor. Ever heard of him? Who would that be, exactly? Sorry, my thinking is already fading, just like everything else. I'm talking about Professor Barbarossa. Was that the guy who suggested to replace nerves by golden wire? The journalists have made a hash of it, as always, but he gained his notoriety because of such remarks, to some extent. Your archetypal nerdy troll. But he was a real genius. Synthetic intelligence is his creation through and through, as well as a bunch of revolutionary works such as Consciousness in a Digital Environment. The old man's simulators changed drastically once Barbarossa's theories were applied. There were no differences from reality. They offered a full immersion effect, and there were no crutches such as centrifuges and so on. That's the time the first capsules appeared. Who could have thought they'd kill me in one of those, huh? Anyway, the old man didn't have enough funds to launch a gaming project, and all the advice they'd been giving him was to curb his enthusiasm and make the world smaller and simpler, without such overwhelming realism. Yet he refused to change his mind, and then a strange thing happened. His ancient enemies, people he'd had decades-long feuds with, started to back the project with their billions, one after another. That's how Second World had come into existence. Isn't that strange? They'd been trying to trip each other up for ages, and here they go, being all lovey-dovey. I see you're not interested in these details much. What I'm trying to emphasize is that people like that don't care about money all that much. They wouldn't have accepted the old man's leadership because of that. He had something else to offer them in return, something they all invested in, and we could have already started colonizing Mars with that kind of money. What would make one abandon all one's principles, eh, Ross? Let me tell you. The prospect to stay alive just a single day longer. You could trust me on that one, and it applies to you, too. That is, if your body was really damaged as heavily, which I doubt. As you probably realize, I haven't seen it either, but I rather doubt that anyone could have pulled off a heist of that magnitude. Are you trying to say you know nothing, and aren't involved in any way? At any rate, your notoriety is dangerous, and everybody's so interested in you that you'll be glad to pay me to learn the details. You're no fool, after all. A fool wouldn't have managed to make such an impact. Know anything about the concept of in-game balance? Nothing at all. Ross, balance is extremely important. As soon as there's a risk of imbalance, Mr. Ruckus turns up and starts to put things in order. And nobody knows just what could be on his mind. No one screws with him. While he's restoring balance, the turf he's sweeping is where you only speak in whispers and never attempt to play ball. Do you remember your recent enslavement? I sure do. Well, you popped up right in the way of Ruckus and his broom. I actually benefited from being enslaved at the moment, and from everything else. So you understand what I'm talking about, then. I can't say I do. I've never even met anyone called Mr. Ruckus. It's not a human being. It's a group of AIs. The top-tier group, more precisely, or the top-tier network, if you will. They were Barbarossa's darlings, his unique masterpiece. A few lower-level AIs were bought by the military, but the old man got hold of the rest, including the three most powerful ones. Other projects rely on admins to keep things in order. They can ban anyone who breaks the rules, and the developers can then fix the bugs that permit them to do so in the first place. In Second World, this is done by the so-called synthetic intelligences, or SynIntels, as Barbarossa used to call them. So let me tell you this, Ross. Your appearance excited the SynIntels a lot. They had to come out of hibernation and check out what could have happened and how it could be fixed. A single person with these many achievements represented an imbalance. But that's just a trifle. The worst thing is that you have caused a ruckus where one should have kept a low profile. You crossed the old man. This may come as some surprise for you, but I've never heard of him, and I've never had any idea of becoming anyone's nemesis. I had no interest in anyone at all. You may be telling the truth. Not that I care much at this point. You may never have heard of the old man, but that's irrelevant. The old man has heard of you, and that's what's important. You live inside the game, having forgotten all about your body, just like your friend. What was his name again? Tangal? A Norder by race? That's right. He's going to live forever, or at least until every last game server stops. Barbarossa made some discovery concerning this, something really big, a straight path to immortality. He must have been the best expert in consciousness that's ever lived. He was also the one who had predicted the effect of players relocating to a virtual world if it didn't differ from the real. Look around you. That's exactly the case. You, as well as all the other ghosts, are the living proof that Barbarossa had been right from the very start. And so was I. However, I'm a different case. So far, I haven't heard anything I'd pay $25,000 for. The old man had Barbarossa murdered. I don't care much about your boss resorting to assassination. On the contrary, the old man cares about you a lot. Everyone who learns of his big secret disappears sooner or later. So will you. This is ridiculous. Even if he destroys my body completely, I'll still stay alive here. You're too naive. How is that? All of this, the entire world, was made for a single purpose, and the corresponding details are only known to the old man and his nearest associates. What I know for sure is that you've caused some chaos in a province they had long-term plans for, but I don't know all the details. They didn't leave me enough time to find them out. You managed to throw a spanner in their works. They didn't plan for Mr. Ruckus to get involved. He's supposed to stay asleep instead of playing havoc with their backyard. And you keep getting in their way, although they're in a hurry. The journalist I had talked to shortly before they killed me reported that one of those old fat cats who had financed the project was near death. He was extremely upset about it, and kept pressing Silver and the others so that they would step on it. Thus, they have something that can keep him alive. One of the things they had told him was that it would be impossible for a while, and that you were one of the reasons for the delay. That must have really unnerved him, so he spilled the beans to the wrong person. And I'm an expert at mining for data. You haven't got the slightest idea how powerful these people are. They'll find you anywhere. I have no idea about the problems they could have with that kind of money. You know everything about my situation, don't you? Do you know how much it costs to grow a new body? 50 million. As far as I see, it's a completely insignificant sum to the likes of them. The clone trick doesn't always work, and the technology is still too new. No one knows when they'll actually start doing it. Hey, I've even been told how much it would cost, so they do cloning after all, albeit in a different country. Do you know what a clone is? It's your full copy. So if you're an old ruin you will stay. So what would be the point? Ross shook his head. Couldn't people such as they account for future developments in cloning technology? Someone must surely have stored some of their DNA for the future. A few live cells would be enough, and the conservation procedure for small specimens has been used successfully for quite a while. Well, there's another problem. You cannot transplant your consciousness into a clone. You would have to transplant the entire brain. After that, the body will soon reach the same age as the brain donor. In other words, it will become the same kind of ruin, and in a very short time, too. So I wouldn't call this technology as reliable as you appear to think it is. They didn't tell me the details. Of course they wouldn't. You've had your brain damaged as well as your body, didn't you? That's right. This should allegedly be treatable at some point in the future, but when exactly? Even the simplest cases, when they clone young and perfectly healthy bodies, are by no means as simple as they might seem. There are still technical details to work out, and it presents many problems legally, which means it's illegal virtually anywhere, and that doesn't make things any easier. Could Silber's secret project involve the transfer of consciousness without the brain? No idea. I don't have all the data. A thread here and a thread there. All I do know, though, is that they'll kill you for sure. They blew up my home without a second thought, and they killed a genius like Barbarossa, making it look like he had eloped with some pretty young thing. Those people are monsters. They'll stop at nothing to make anyone who gets in their way, or at least can present a problem potentially, shut up for good. By the way, I didn't cross them once. I was just doing my job. I may have been overzealous and cut a few corners. They didn't like it, so here I go. They see you as a real pain in the ass. They'll eliminate you just as easily. Like I care, I have already died so many times that not even a million deaths would scare me. This is something quite different. All deaths are the same here. Sure, you always come back after a brief moment of darkness, but when these guys get to you, there'll be no rebirth. You will die a final death. That's impossible. You don't even imagine what's possible for Silber. He was one of this world's founding fathers. He worked out all the mechanics. Although Barbarossa performed the most important part of the work by implementing a self-supporting control system, but Silber would not be himself without reserving a chance to take care of anyone who'd cause him grief in a terminal way. There's a unique in-game object. No one has seen it yet, and it has never been used. It's in a testing location, inaccessible to players, although it's part of Second World, technically. It's a mob of sorts, but one controlled by a real person with the aid of a special capsule. I know for sure that Silber has one in his private chamber, so when he decides it's time for you to buy the farm, he'll just crawl in, and the killer mob will leave its location. The mob's attack irreversibly destroys any object. If the object in question is a player, they disappear, leaving a dead body behind in real life. Hold on a second. How can that be true? One never dies IRL after a death here. In the worst case scenario, you just go offline. Oh, this thing is lethal, all right. Don't you doubt the old man. You die here, and you die there. This is madness. How about the fact that a dead man like me can still play his favorite game? Barbarossa knew almost everything there was to know about the consciousness, or perhaps we could even drop the almost, and was naive enough to share this knowledge with Silber. The old man had him killed, and he'll kill anyone, no matter where they are. The game is no exception. Now he knows the real nature of consciousness and how to scramble it, and he can scramble it until there's nothing left. So you get a body without any consciousness. You realize what it's called, or should I tell you? I get it. So, what do you say? Does this information cost 25,000? You don't have to answer. I'd have told you everything anyway, free of charge. You have no idea how it hurts when your loyalty is rewarded by a destroyed apartment and a charred body. They have killed me, there as well as here. But you're still alive here. That's where you're wrong, Ross. That's where you're wrong. I'm not like you. The trick with migrating into virtual reality doesn't work for everyone. It didn't work for me. It may be that there wasn't enough time to become fully immersed into the world, or perhaps I wasn't one of the lucky guys in the first place. I am dissolving, like a lump of sugar in a cup of tea. I keep feeling worse, my thoughts get confused, and I keep getting stupider. I haven't even told you everything I know. My memory isn't mine anymore, nor are my thoughts. I only have a few days left here. Then I'll fizzle out, and the digital person will cease to exist. So you have no particular need for the money, then? Oh, how wrong you are. It wouldn't hurt to have it, at any rate. You can die in some dark corner, weeping in self-pity, but there are ways that are much more fun. Take a look around. This is the capital. You can splurge all you want here. You know, Ross, I've always prioritized my career over my personal life. Well, you get the idea. Take a look around you. There are lots of women, and all of them look great. There are all kinds of people here. Some of them don't value money that much. Given enough gold, I can spend the rest of my day in the lap of luxury and gather myself a small harem. I won't need much. 25,000 is most likely what I'll have enough time to spend. Given my expected lifespan, asking for millions would be ridiculous, and I need nothing from you anyway. Maybe you'll keep on putting spokes in their wheels. That's an idea I'll cherish during those last moments before my mind leaves me completely. All right. Time for us to part ways. I shared all the content of my decaying mind with you already, I reckon. Be wary of absolutely everything, especially new monsters. No one knows what that special one looks like. Its appearance could be completely innocent. Don't ever let anything or anyone get near, and don't even think of leaving the capital on foot. If I manage to find you, others will too. You're not as elusive as you think, and anyone can be hunted down. Well, that's it. Good luck. Hold on. What is it? Ross called digits over, pointing at Cody Mih. We'll go to the bank now. I'll give you the stuff I want to sell, and you'll give this guy here 25,000. Digits sighed. Duh. He's managed to wheedle it out of you after all. I saw a noob today who was weirder than anything I've ever seen. As in, so brain-dead it hurts to watch? Nope. Idiot noobs are two a penny anyway. What was so weird about him then? He entered the capital through the Eastern Gate. Thousands of noobs enter the capital through those gates every day. You couldn't count them all. Sure. But I've never seen the guards bow to a noob before. I've never seen them bow to anyone. A conversation in the game chat. Stage 14 initiation. Delay detected. Critical information received by object. It comes from an alternative source. It is uncontrollable. A waste of time. Confirmed. Scenario adjustment. Control assumed. Object approaching. Variable point. Standing by. Ready. There is the possibility that the object will interact with other sources of critical information. Variability confirmed. Taking measures against untimely contact. Initializing interference scenario. Possibility of premature contact reduced by 92%. Standing by for initialization sequence. Electronic noise deep in the neural network of the second world. Chapter 12. None of the players could give so much as an approximate area of the second world. Even the known locations weren't studied completely, and there were new ones opening, as in the recent case of the locked lands that had caused such a commotion. One thing was obvious, though. The Earth, also known as the Third World, was considerably smaller in size. It made sense. Who would want to have to rub shoulders with too many people with nowhere to go? There was enough of that sort of dubious pleasure IRL. If you wanted crowds, though, you could find those in Second World as well. There were mass events related to clan wars and the extermination of the strongest bosses, then spontaneous events like the fall of the wall that had kept the locked lands inaccessible, and the traditional city bustle in popular places. Ross didn't manage to get into the tiny courtyard before the Imperial Chancellery for an unexpected reason. There were hundreds of players there, or maybe thousands. They stood shoulder to shoulder, packed so tightly that you couldn't swing a mouse, let alone a cat. It was a monolithic mass of people. Getting in would be impossible. But Ross tried to anyway.
"So, where are you trying to squeeze in, you noob? Think you're a screw or something?"
A dwarf that was rather tall by the standards of his race looked rather irate. "I need to see the Emperor. It's urgent."
"Come again? Hey, folks, look here. This pathetic halfwit wants to see the Emperor. Says it's urgent, too."
The nearest players started to laugh, and there were a few rude remarks made by some of them. However, one of the players turned out to be relatively friendly. He explained, trying hard not to smile.
"Actually, all of us have come to see the Emperor. Many have been here for months. The general principle is like this. If you manage to get into the yard in the morning, you can stay in the queue. Then the entrance is closed. They wouldn't have let you in, even if it wasn't for the crowd. But there's always a crowd here. People try to get in as soon as the gates are opened."
"Yeah, always crowded," the dwarf chimed in. "And everyone has a high-level quest that involves seeing the Emperor. No one would waste so much time otherwise. Sometimes he allows audiences, and sometimes he doesn't. They only let you in one person at a time, so it's a long wait, and some decide it isn't worth it in the first place."
"But the quests are sure worth it," said a voice from the crowd.
"That's just what I've said. We wouldn't have been standing here otherwise. So beat it, noob. There's nothing for you here. You're out of your depth. The Emperor doesn't let any low-level players in at all. Quests where you have to see him start at level 200, and they're rare. You need to catch your luck by the tail, and yours doesn't seem to be that good to me."
"But I really have some business to discuss with him."
"Oh, sure. Worthy of an audience. Important, is it?"
"Yes, very much so."
"Oh, I should have figured that out myself. Important business indeed. Come back in the morning and try to force your way through when they open the gates. But bear in mind that all this crowd will be doing just the same. Watch out, or you'll get trampled in the stampede. I'd be careful to so much as sneeze around you. You might get blown away."
There were a few more laughs from the crowd, but then they were followed by offended yelling. The crowd started to move back and forth, as if trying to do an impression of a stormy sea. The din kept getting louder, then two rows of sharp pikes appeared above the heads of the players. Their wielders were approaching fast, somehow managing to push through the monolithic throng. Then a gap appeared in the wall of human bodies, and Ross saw a passage open in front of him, held by two rows of Imperial guards. They faced each other. With the visors on their helmets down, they may have been mistaken for statues of niellowed metal. The players that have to move aside stopped grumbling and grew as silent as the NPCs. Something extraordinary must have been happening, and no one wanted to miss anything. A bow-legged dwarf NPC appeared, scurrying through the corridor formed by the motionless warriors.
He was clad in a motley arrangement of expensive garments. The tastelessness of the garb notwithstanding, he looked most impressive, and one didn't feel like laughing at him. Besides the look on his face, you could tell the guy was a right sourpuss, and always ready to express his negative opinion on any subject. No one wanted to have anything to do with a kibitzer like that. As the dwarf stepped out of the gates, he made a theatrical embracing gesture with his hand, placed a most unnaturally looking grin on his face, and shouted in a resonant voice,
"Oh, what joy! The greatest of joys! A miracle! So you have decided to visit us at last! Greetings!"
"Greetings to you, too," said a slightly baffled Ross.
"Is everything fine with you? Are you treated with respect? How did the guards at the city gates behave?"
"Everything was fine. They were very respectful. They even bowed to me."
"Was it a deep enough bow?"
"I guess it was."